At the core of everything that Loggy does is transforming everyday video, and by everyday video, I basically mean mobile phone footage, into trusted, structured, owned assets for business organizations. And so what we see is video as content is our everyday sort of business. Video as data is replacing checklists, and that's in that sort of converting anything you can see and hear into data. That's the mid-market. And then video as evidence is really the market we really want to move into, because that's the very high compliance, very high security area.
Welcome to Pick My Brain, the podcast where we help startup founders improve their pitches to better connect with customers, co-founders, and investors. My name's Alan Jones, and I'm an ex-startup founder myself, but that was a long time ago. Now, I'm an angel investor with literally decades, sadly, of experience helping new businesses find their footing and achieve their goals. But first, I'd like to acknowledge that this podcast is being recorded on Gadigal land, land that was never ceded. I pay my respects to their innovators and leaders, past, present, and emerging. On Pick My Brain, you'll hear the real story straight from founders as they pitch their startups, tackle the challenges we all face, and try to turn their ideas into a successful business. Each episode, we'll see if I can help these founders take their startups another step forward with some advice, some ideas, and maybe a little constructive criticism. Thanks for joining me. Let's get started.
You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Founders scale faster on Deel. Set up payroll for any country in minutes, hire anyone, anywhere, get visas handled fast, and get back to building. Visit deel.com/day1. That's deel.com/day1.
Ever sat through security training and thought, Nimbus helps me ship code? Well, Glass Cyber gets it. The Foundations of Application Security course is built for engineers who actually build things. 2 days, hands-on, and packed with lessons you can use the minute you're back at your desk. It's practical, it's relevant, and it'll make you better at your job, not just tick a box. Register your interest at glasscyber.com.au/learn for the 2026 intake. That's glasscyber.com.au/learn.
Today's episode, we're joined by Justin Wasnag, the founder and CEO of Vloggy. That's VLOGGI.com. And Justin, I've just realized that I'm not actually entirely sure how to pronounce your surname, even though we've known each other for a few years. Can you run me through it?
Wasnage.
Wasnage.
Or Wasnage, depending on your accent. Look, I don't get hung up about it at all.
Is it a village? Is it a hamlet? Is it a town? Is it a river? Where does that surname come from?
Well, funnily enough, it's from a town in France called Gâtinais, which was in Normandy. And the royal family or the noble family from Gâtinais went to England, and they were the Du Gâtinais. And then over the years, the Du was dropped, and then the spelling changed. And interestingly enough, there was only one family with the name in Australia. But then John Wasnage, who's actually in the startup scene as well, moved to Australia recently, and I caught up with him at the startup hub. Yeah, so now there's two of us, both in the startup sector.
That's an amazing coincidence. That's amazing. So was this like the Norman conquest? Do you have Frankish blood?
Yep, correct. Yeah, so it's Viking. So the Vikings went to Normandy, settled it, and then the Normans went to England and settled that. In fact, I did a DNA test not long ago, or during COVID, and basically our family haven't moved out of the southeast of England for 1,000 years.
Well done on being the first. Well done, be the first. Mate, I can already sense listeners and watchers tuning out while we nerd out on British history. But there's always two questions at the beginning of the episode that I like to ask the founders who come on the show, just to give everybody a sense for who we're talking today, where they've come from. So what's your origin story? When you were a kid, what did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, actually, I wanted to be a radio presenter or a sort of I'm a big fan of British panel shows. So really, for me, that was the ultimate goal, was could you be one of those comedians who sort of thinks on their feet and tells funny stories? And there's a backup plan, was a radio journalist, and then, and TV and radio. So that was always kind of what I kind of wanted to do, but that didn't quite pan out. So
That's a pretty tough gig, I can say, as a pretty ordinary run-of-the-mill podcaster. It's pretty hard to think on your feet and keep an audience entertained and also give some informational value. It's a tough gig. Mate, you're still in media today, but the world of media has come a long way since we were young. Tell us a bit more about Floggy, its origins, and where it's gone and where it is today. Give me your pitch, basically.
So essentially, at the core of everything that Vloggy does is transforming everyday video, and by everyday video, I basically mean mobile phone footage, into trusted, structured, owned assets for business organizations. Now, at the very basic level, that is video as content. So to give you an example, this week we're being used by Major League Baseball and Netflix in the US to crowdsource a commercial around everyone singing Take Me Home to the Ball Game. And for that, you know, Netflix's lawyers crawled all over our terms and conditions and so forth. But that's an example of where they need video just as pure as content, but they need to legally own the rights. So that's kind of what we've been doing for sort of 5 years. And then about a year or so ago, we really got approached by companies needing video as evidence. And for that, that's a more industrial setting. So essentially anywhere where workers need to collect data, checklists, or anywhere where basically they can walk and talk and describe a problem and film at the same time is where we come in. So those companies are much higher up the value chain. So what we see is video as content is our everyday sort of business. Video as data is replacing checklists, and that's in that sort of converting anything you can see and hear into data. That's the mid-market. And then video as evidence is really the market we really want to move into, because that's the very high compliance, very high security area. We're talking to a very large organization for whom security and safety of the data is absolutely paramount. And that's where the really high value stuff comes in.
What's broken with the way most video gets uploaded? So let's say, for instance, we're crowdsourcing video from Major League Baseball fans, and they're all singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. What's broken with you know the current popular ways to upload and source that content?
Well, I'll tell you, about 6 months ago, something really changed, which was Sora. So basically, with synthetic AI video, this has really propelled a lot of large corporates to come and talk to us, because there's four things converging at once. One is the rise of synthetic video. It is very easy now to fake video that looks almost as good, and in 2 weeks' time or a month's time, it will look as good. So this rise of synthetic media is one. Rise of another trend, though, is Generation Z workers expect to be able to record stuff on their phone and narrate. So we've had lots of large organizations in the construction space saying that they have unsecure WhatsApp groups, you know, reporting faults and that kind of stuff. So workers, especially younger workers, are already using video, narrated video, as an input source. But at the moment, that is unsecure. So that's the third thing, is it's unsecure and it's unstructured. So typically, if you're collecting video from a variety of sources, be they employees or the general public, all the videos come in and they sit in a cloud file, and they're essentially unusable. They're unusable until they're verified, and until you have the rights to use them. So in the use case you were talking about, the crowdsourcing, there used to be a lot of going back and forth, getting model releases, getting content assignment forms from those. That's kind of what we've had built into our system for 5 years. And what we're laying on top now is those industrial use cases where it's employees shooting the videos rather than members of the public.
So just want to get the sense that the business has changed over time, pivoted a few times, as we say in Startup Land. Where did Vloggy originally begin, and what were the market signals you got from customers or from investors that you needed to find a better product customer fit?
The question that I think you were about to ask was, what did I do before startup?
Sorry, we launched right into it, didn't we?
But however, the two are linked, right? So I was working, I started my career actually in a tech startup in London in the video space, and then moved worked for Microsoft again, pioneered video public relations, and then worked in publishing for trade publications and pioneered things like videos from trade shows. So video was always there, and then immediately before starting this, I was actually working in the tourism sector in lobbying. Decided to go out on my own, and all of my clients then were tourism boards. They all had the same problem. They needed massive amounts of video shot on location. They couldn't pay people to create it. So that's when I came up with the idea of, everybody has a phone, so can we make a way that video could get from someone's phone into legally the hands of tourism organizations? We can solve this problem. And that's really where the genesis came from. And the problem is that we raised money, we built this the minimal viable product, and we had customers, South Australian Tourism Commission paying customer, Tourism Victoria, all of these signed contracts, and then COVID. So that was basically pivot one, was suddenly the whole travel and tourism industry that the initial product was built around collapsed. So then we raised some money to retool it towards marketing. And that's where we really invested that time in. And Jack's Tires and Auto were the first customer who really insisted on this, was that mechanism by which you transfer the ownership rights from the contributor over to the corporate. So that was kind of our biggest pivot. And then we built that. And basically since then, or only been customer funded. So any features we've done have been customer funded. So some of those, how we've responded to customers there, for example, Google Ads was a customer. They paid for us to build a whole feature set around video surveys. So question 1 of 2, question 2 of 2, so forth. We have the New South Wales government as a customer, and they need something particular in the way that those submissions are categorized and archived. So essentially we've been really focusing for the 3 years since we built that, sort of since we pivoted then, into really just improving all the focus, all the features for video as content. And then about a year ago, we started rebuilding this video as data engine. So what that really meant was that we had to build the back end from scratch, to be knowing that the customers that are going to use that are much more sensitive around data privacy, data security. So we've rebuilt it to be completely white label and deployable. And I guess that kind of gives us two things. It means that we can use resellers to actually target specific verticals. And it also means that we can actually serve those highest compliance enterprise customers with their own deployment of our system.
Gotcha. So all the way along here, you've been bootstrapping, funding the growth of the business out of cash flow. How big is the team? You've mentioned we a couple of times. Who is Vloggy?
It has been as big as 7 people, but it's currently 4 of us. But 2 of us day to day, and then contractors and so forth.
Mm. Any external investors so far?
Not for 4 years. So we did raise money. We raised a small friends and family round in 2019 in order to build the MVP, and then we went back to those same investors in 2021 to build the MMP, the minimal marketable product. We are out again. We have some large enterprise deals on the horizon, and we actually need to get to a certain level to even be able to satisfy those customers. So we currently have a safe round open. Only it's not something that's already been invested with. Trying to raise $800,000 in order just to really bring this enterprise product to the market and to satisfy some of the things like the US presence. To be frank, you know, the product that we have at the moment, even video as content, could easily, based on benchmarks of similar products, be a $1 million ARR product with very little effort, because all the marketing funnels there, the product exists, so forth. And then we have this other opportunity to actually take it to much, much larger customers. But some of that, we need some money just to actually do it. So in the perfect world, you'd raise sort of 7 or 8 million. But this being Australia and money is not easy to come by, we've set our sights lower just to do the minimum required really to build those foundations to scale the business, both video as content and video as data.
Gotcha. Great. The team's grown and shrunk a few times. Tell me about how you've built the platform. What's the platform built in? How has that changed?
So I built a prototype, which essentially was just hacking Typeform. And the irony of that is that Typeform last year bought a company called VideoAsk out of Spain for $32 million. And they had essentially done the same hack that I did kind of 5 years ago. So that was the prototype. And on the back of that, we got the South Australian government to give us a contract. And we proved that you could actually collect video and edit it without ever having to go to a location. And then when we actually raised some money to build an MVP, we actually hired a very talented video engineer who actually holds the patent for the first streaming of mobile video over 3G, I think. And he built the back end and the proprietary encoder flow that we are actually still using today, right? So at the very kernel of what we have currently is a C++ and FFmpeg encoder flow that does a whole lot of sort of magic. And we built around, the original platform was built in PHP, which saw me, Sam, late tonight with a book, PHP for Dummies, breaking the code. And then when we turned it into a minimal market product, we rebuilt it all in Node.js and React front ends. And then JC, Jean-Christophe, has spent the best part of a year actually rebuilding it again, completely MCP, which I know has a question mark over it now, but replacing all the APIs with MCP. The reason for that is because at the heart of the analysis part, so if you're going to convert video into data, you don't know what data the customer wants. So it's completely modular so that, sure, everyone wants speech to text, everyone wants object recognition, but do they also want audio signature? Do they also want optical character recognition? There's over 1,000 AI models out there. Our system will be able to accept any of them. And rather than it being API calls that have to be updated, the idea is that all of those connections are now MCP, which means that it should, in theory, be able to accept any AI model.
At a high level, non-technical user, you know, VC investor level, how do you verify that the video that's been uploaded isn't synthetic, is authentic?
So there's a few ways of doing it. The simplest way, though, is by recording the device data. So essentially, in our projects, you have three ways of uploading video. One is through the camera. Another one is uploading a file or allowing a third party to upload a file. Now, uploading a video from a device is obviously the most secure, and you get the actual device data, and that's recorded, that's hashed in a log. And then you can also run some other analysis over it, like the length and duration, the pixel depth, the metadata analysis. So you can get to a level where you can get to about 99% accuracy that it is human generated. But more importantly, you also have a log of every change that's made to that video, so, which means that the original video is stored, and then any changes the company makes are then logged in a chain of custody, which means that legally, even if somebody were to upload a fake video, you have evidence of that. So first of all, it's actually quite hard to upload a fake video from a device camera because our system takes over the camera. That's hard, but not impossible to hack if you really were that way inclined. But every device has a unique MAC address and a IMEIE number. So there's ways of actually triangulating that. If somebody were really, really wanted to, they probably could, but in 99% of cases, that's fine. In actual fact, during the US presidential election, we were used by Robert F. Kennedy's campaign. And when they contacted us, they said at that time, they were still up against Trump. And their campaign reached out to us and said, we know that their campaign, a lot of their videos are created in St. Petersburg in a bot farm. We really need to have faith that the answers that we're getting from potential voters are real videos. So they basically did that by disabling uploading videos and only allowing videos to be recorded on people's devices.
Are clients typically signing up on a per project basis, or are they signing up for an annual license to a particular iteration of the product or a particular set of features? How does the commercial work?
Yeah, so we actually haven't launched yet the industrial compliance version. So at the moment, everyone's coming through one funnel, which is still quite heavily focused on video as content. And one of the drivers, as per your question earlier about the pivot, one of our drivers towards video as data was too much of the flow at the moment is per campaign. As soon as this video is content, then there is a need for it and there's an end date. So we really needed to find a way to get companies to use it more and more every day. Our driving metric, so our North Star metric, is number of videos processed and number of processes applied to those videos. So we really want companies to use it every day with hundreds of employees, if not thousands, and for them to apply lots of video processes to that. So what I mean by is analysis. So not just to encode and watermark and to speech to text the video, but also to extract object recognition, also to extract audio signature, also to extract, because every time they do that, that's an API call and that's a much higher value for us, but it's also a higher value for them. So essentially, kind of what we're raising money for is to really take that more valuable use case to market, because the other one is already in market and that just needs acceleration. But that second use case, we will probably need to work with industry specialists. So for example, we have clients in that pipeline in the chemical inspection area, and they have a slightly different workflow. They have the same inputs. The input will always be everyday video, so mobile phone footage. But what they're looking for in that use case is they need to be able to read chemical labels. Right, so that is relatively straightforward to do, but then their outputs is where it kind of gets tricky. So they need them in certain report formats, and they need certain things flagged. So that's a particular industry that we would work with somebody in that industry to co-develop, co-design a version of the software for them. They would sell it to their market, and we would get a license share. So really how we take that product to market is different. So essentially what we've built is a backend that can handle unlimited numbers of white labels. The inputs are always the same, the outputs are different, but in the center is the same core system.
Do you think that maybe perhaps rather than being a backend, it's a middle end,
infrastructure.
A mid layer? Yeah, a middleware.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, we have a very large potential customer that we've signed a contract with in the financial services sector. Our brand wouldn't be visible anywhere in their deployment, right? It would be a complete white label. So yes, essentially where we want to be is that infrastructure layer. We want to be the trusted source of verified video, be that for compliance or for content.
Okay, you know, I think that helps with the story, because I think a challenge when pitching startups to Australian startup investors, we touched already before about how valuations are more conservative here and rounds are typically smaller, and so you know it's a bigger ask here. But I think another potential challenge is that Australian investors don't get very many opportunities to invest in infrastructure players. You know, most of what we do most of the time is in customer facing, whether the customer is a consumer or a business or an enterprise. It's actually, you know, it's got our logo on it, and you know when you're using Canva, you know when you're using Jira, you know when you're using Safety Culture, what you're using, right? The few exceptions there is there have been a few successful Aussie startups in software development, you know, people assisting with deploying applications in their cloud or managing cloud infrastructure. There's been a few successful cases there, but most of us don't get to operate much in middleware or in infrastructure. So I think coming out up front and making it clear that that is what this is, might be a good way forward. So we're selling something that has very broad application across a wide range of enterprise, media, consumer-facing, public service and government service operations, but you're never going to see the vloggy brand or what's being delivered unless you're a software engineer working for one of those organizations.
That's really useful. And this, yeah, the title of this show is Pick Your Brains. And I have picked your brains before, but one of the challenges that I face now is...
Founder scale faster on Deel. Set up payroll for any country in minutes, hire anyone anywhere, and get visas handled fast so you stay focused on scaling. Deel takes care of onboarding, HR, IT, EOR, benefits, and compliance so your team can grow without borders. It's why more than 40,000 fast-growing companies trust Deel to move fast. Visit deel.com/day1. That's deel.com/day1.
A lot of people in the Australian investment scene know either me or know the brand. They know that video is content story. So what they don't know is what we've been doing for the past year, which is essentially building that infrastructure tool. And so they'll either email back like, "Nope, we looked at this 4 years ago, weren't interested." You know, or you get talking, and then like you did actually at the beginning of the show, you put the website, and the website, because that is still a working funnel for customers, needs to reflect that story of video as content, whereas actually bloggytech.com, you know, tells a different story. So how would you go about that positioning, that pivot of, sure, we may have started here, but actually we see the much higher value over here?
Yeah, so there are no easy answers to this question, at least not until you've got a name brand investor signed in to the round, right? Because then you can say to an investor who hasn't committed yet, you can say, well, so-and-so are already in. Why don't you, you know, if you're not sure how this is different to what we pitched you a year ago, how about you check in with them and see why they've committed this time around? But that's, you know, not something that we can do until we have one of those name brand investors on board. What we might be able to do in the meantime is create a bit of an air gap between what investors think that they know Vloggy is and what we're doing now, video as data. And one way to create that air gap is to have Vloggy become the name of a product in a suite of products. And another way to do that is just to rebrand. It's just to, you know, you're still the founder and it's a video related business, but this is a different startup that you're investing in with a different brand. So you can be Atlassian and have Jira and Confluence, all that kind of thing. So you can have a new holding company that investors are investing in, and they perceive that you've got the old Vloggy, but you've got another product as well. Or you can just say, no, we're just still one company, one product name, but it's new, it's different. So that's difficult because it incurs, you know, additional brand marketing expense and changing all your pitch templates and getting new t-shirts made, new merchandise. But it is probably the shortest path to helping investors understand that this is not what they remember from the last time you pitched.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I was actually speaking to a US investor the other day who kind of said the opposite. because I said, oh, we had this pitch deck and we're talking about Vidproof, which is what we're talking, what we're calling the video as data product. And he was like, yeah, but the way I see it, people start as video as content, and then you get talking to their team and they realize they could deploy it within their workforce as data, and then legal get involved, and then it gets to video as evidence. So, you know, the whole thing should be a continuum. But he was thinking big picture. I mean, it's funny. He was like, man, you've got everything we're looking for. Existing product, in market, big names, why are people not investing in you? Because it does have some recognition in the market and it is pulling in big names, even though, I mean, we've turned away more big names than we've landed. NRMA needed SOC 2 compliance, Bolt Car, CarShare. That was going to be a beauty. That was going to be 14 countries. Again, starting with video as content from their employees. But then they actually talked about, could we use this to actually collect data from riders at the end of their system? You know, so they were already thinking that way. But because we weren't SOC 2 compliant, it fell apart. So I get your point. And we do have this other brand, VidProof and VideoVault. So we do kind of have some of these other brands. But some investors said that is more confusing to have multiple brands on one pitch deck.
It's going to be confusing for people that aren't already familiar with Vloggy. You know, so like if you're pitching a US investor that isn't already familiar with the company, they don't have a problem with, you know, they're not going to write you off because they heard about you 3 years ago. They could be open because they've never heard about you before. But if we're talking about addressing the problem of Australian investors, all of whom you've pitched to over the past 4 years, then maybe the way to solve that problem is for them to have some rebrand exercise. So they do appreciate that this is a different company now. Another way forward, but again, not a simple solution, is to make somebody else the point person on the investment pitch. Because startup investing is very much about the people, right? So we make a call on what we think the total addressable market is. We make a call on how innovative and potentially better solution the startup solution is going to be. And then it's, do we back the people behind this, right? So every startup investment opportunity, a big chunk of it, I would say, for most investors, 70-80% of it is who's behind it. Sometimes it could just help to have the point person on the initial pitch be somebody else that hasn't received this pitch from investors before. That could be a member of an advisory board or a director of the firm or somebody that you just hire for the purposes of raising this capital on a modest retainer and success fee basis.
Yeah, we appointed a corporate advisor to do exactly that end of last year. And he got some reasonable leads, but none of them converted. I mean, that ran into the Christmas sort of period. I was doing quite a bit of talking to angels and stuff before Christmas. That ran into that sort of period. He basically took our pitch deck and then rewrote it, and he wrote his own sort of version. We could use him again.
Yeah, or someone different. You know, like I went to the chiropractor yesterday and I've been seeing a chiropractor since I was young and talking to a friend at dinner last night, you know, they said, oh no, don't like chiropractors. I went to one once, it didn't help. So, dude, you realize that there's good chiropractors and bad chiropractors, right? So, you know, or people will say to me, you know, I've tried LinkedIn advertising and it didn't work. And if I dig down, I'll find out that they ran one creative with one targeting and spent one budget on it and decided they didn't like the results. And so for them, LinkedIn advertising doesn't work, you know. So, you know, we can have somebody represent our company and have a good or bad experience. It sounds like maybe, you know, raising towards the end of the calendar year in Australia is always going to be tough because investors are always thinking about, I don't want to make big decisions and write large checks just before I take the family away for a Christmas holiday. I'll get back to this when I get back from break. So there may have been some element of seasonality in their success or lack of success. But also there are other people out there in the market, and you may find somebody with a better set of connections or somebody that just seems to do a better job of pitching this. You know, we've always got to A/B test our experiments. We can't just one run without a control.
Yeah, and then the other thing I was going to ask you was, again, conflicting views on whether the pitch deck should be visual because you're presenting it, or what I find is most Australian investors, they just want to see a PDF of the pitch deck. You know, that is what they make their initial decision on, which means that it needs to have quite a bit of information in that pitch deck.
Everybody's different, and it can sometimes be helpful to ask an investor what they'd like to see first. And usually they will say, I would like to see a deck first, but they won't really specify what should be and not be in that deck. So it can be pretty tough. But you know, my personal preference, and I think what works for a lot of Australian investors, is to use a teaser deck up front. You know, so not all the information, not a huge amount of reading, but just some hints at tremendous commercial potential, tremendous commercial value, and all they have to do to better join those dots and understand how is to schedule a video call with you or to jump in on a coffee. And then you can have a conversation person to person, which is always a better way for someone to build trust and confidence in you as a founder and in the business idea. And then you can follow up that initial conversation with here's the meaty deck, you know, with all the footnotes and the appendices and how we arrived at this commercial model and what we think the total addressable market is, you know, in real terms rather than just a high level Venn diagram. So I think that works a lot of the time, but by no mean all the time. And I do think now, you know, with AI being applied to all sorts of funnel processes where there's a lot of information at the top, I do think we're starting to see a lot of investors say, sure, send everything you have because I'm just going to use an AI to ingest it all and give me a summary and give it a score out of 100 and tell me whether or not I should agree to have a coffee with you.
Yeah, right.
It may be worthwhile sending a whole deck out to somebody or testing that with 3, 4, or 5 investor leads, you know, so not your best leads, but just a representative sample of the rest of them and see if that big deck gets you no response at all, or if that big deck gets you, no thanks, we're going to pass. If you do get some introduction from that, maybe worth just leading with the big deck.
That's a sort of, that's an answer which is, could go either way, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's no such thing as a guaranteed solution, or it wouldn't be the startup industry if we knew how to do this, right? Everything's always an experiment. The challenge is in finding ways to execute the experiment quickly enough and cheaply enough that we manage to survive as a business.
So if you were to replay, I know that you're leading this interview, but if you were to replay back to me how you would pitch the business, currently called Vloggy, but could be called whatever. How would you do it?
Yeah, I think kind of where you started was a really interesting way to pitch it today. I'm not a huge fan of video as data because I think you have to unpack a lot before somebody goes, I get what you mean. So you could maybe name check it at the beginning of the pitch, or you could just use it as in summary. We see video as data and that's where its true commercial value lies. But I think where you started was, you know, we all believed, you know, until recently that we could trust what we see with our own eyes, you know. And now in a world of AI, the very thing that we used to think that we could trust the most, what we see with our own eyes when we see a still photo on a web page or whether we see a video, can no longer be trusted. If it's not already 100% fakeable, it very soon will be.
71% of people do not trust video anymore, according to Adobe survey came out in January. This US investor, actually, I got to be careful because we had one of the major airlines in Australia as a customer, and they've come back to us recently. And again, they were using it as video as content for employees. They came back to us just last week and said, actually, could we use your tool to get ad hoc inspection from remote airports? So not critical stuff, not anything where you need a licensed engineer, but some ad hoc stuff where there's tape on the ground or there's something, you know, some anomalies that they need to get back to base. Could they use our tool to the engineers or ground crew just walk around and talk and record those incidents? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And they said, look, we're very slow to deal with, but we do now have this pilot program where we look for new innovation. And that's kind of why they reached out to us. And it was good because they were a paying customer and they might be again. The US investor, he said, look, you should basically use that as a story to lead in with. I said, yeah, but we can't name that airline. But is that the sort of thing you think to frame it in someone's mind?
It's often a good idea to give somebody a concrete, real example of how the product can be used, and then go broad from that and say, but please don't think of us as a company that's helping airlines do infrastructure inspections, right? Because that's just one example of what we do. What we actually are is a middleware layer. so that people who are relying on video content for regulatory, legal, insurance risk, etc. purposes, can trust that what's been uploaded is real and can be used later in evidence, in trial, you know, as part of an insurance claim, etc. It's probably a good idea to start with one vertical example, but then to go straight to, don't think of us as a company that does this for that, because we're a middleware layer and the true application for what we do is vast across all industries, across government, across media.
Yeah, no, thanks. The latest debt does do some of that.
Cool, great. I think the way you pitch the business and the journey along the way, you come across very credible, very knowledgeable, very experienced. I love that you talk about how you built that first version of yourself and taught yourself enough to typeform hacking and enough PHP hacking to make further progress. I think all investors feel like they want to back people who are just so determined to solve this problem that they will build it themselves, gone to happen if they have to, right? So I think that's a really helpful part of the story too, that didn't come out until we got into questions. And of course, the other part of the story is your man JC and holding the patent on
who just called, in fact.
Yeah. So I think that's an important part of the story to weave in there. You know, so we often talk about we as a startup, and investors don't ask often enough, well, like, who is we? Is this the royal we? Me, Justin, the self-taught PHP hacker, or are there other?
I mean, Jean-Christophe, JC, he's very much enterprise software, very much the big end of town. That's where he's come from. So really, he's the person who's built an enterprise version of the software, you know. And when you asked about technical details earlier, I don't know a lot of the technical stuff that he talks about, because it's all the stuff that big, big companies need, because that's the world that he's from.
Cool. We should probably let our listeners and viewers get along with their day. So, thanks, Justin, for telling us all about Vloggy and about Video for Data and for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, listeners and viewers, for this and every episode of Pick My Brains, the advice podcast for every startup founder. Thanks for listening and watching. And if you enjoyed this episode, never mind though, don't forget the like and subscribe bullshit that every other podcast host goes on about. Instead, please take a moment to think about another founder that you know, someone who could use some of the advice we've talked about today, and tell them that they should listen or watch it. Maybe they'll choose to like and subscribe. That'd be nice. That said, I'm not a lawyer or an accountant, and what you've learned today is not intended as financial or legal advice, and you should always seek that from a qualified professional before making big decisions. I'm not a superhero either, so don't forget that sometimes I'm fallible. Very occasionally, I might even be wrong. So please let me know when you think I might be, so that I can get better at this too. Just reach out to me on any of our social channels or email the show at pickmybrain@startupfoundercoach.com. That's pickmybrain@startupfoundercoach.com. The Pick My Brain podcast is produced, edited, and being directly to your ears and eyes by the hardworking and greatly appreciated team at Day One, the podcast network for founders, operators, and investors. Find out more at dayone.fm. That's dayone.fm. Thanks for watching. Thanks for joining me for this and every episode of Pick My Brains, the advice podcast for every startup founder. Have you been listening to the show and wishing you could ask for a little advice about your startup? Well, here's your chance to do just that. We're trying something new and you can be part of it too. Leave me a voicemail message with a question you'd like answered in a future episode, and I'll do my best to give you the best advice I can. Just go to speakpipe.com/pickmybrain and leave me your most pressing question, request, or just some feedback and support for the show. Go to speakpipe.com/pickmybrain or follow the link in the show notes.